Hi there. Welcome to another episode of the Customer-Led Groove Show, where we discuss and share the best practices and the latest trends in customer marketing, advocacy, and customer-led growth. Today's episode is brought to you by BASE, a pioneer in B2B marketing and the industry's first CLG ecosystem for customer-led marketers, sales, and product professionals. Okay, let's welcome the CLG team and today's guests.
Hi there, Scott Wilder here, and welcome to another episode of Customer-Led Groove, orchestrated by BASE and brought to you by the CLG Campus. Today, I'm with Brian Oblinger. Did I get that right?
You got it.
Awesome. Brian has his own consulting firm, and he'll tell us a little bit about that, but he's been the VP of Global Community at Alteryx. He's got years of experience from Lithium and Khoros, if you all remember Lithium, and then you probably know him from his podcast with Erica, In Before the Lock. So Brian, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Scott. I appreciate it.
So where I'd like to start is the classic question that everybody starts with is, tell us about your journey and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. You know, I got started, I was a kid on the internet in the 90s, like so many people, kind of, you know, early on in, I guess, maturity of the internet. And I always tell the story that, you know, I was a kid, I liked video games. And so when I first got an internet connection, that's the first thing I did was go to, it wasn't Google back then, right? It was Netscape or whatever. And I, you know, was seeking out gaming sites. And it turned out that Sony PlayStation was like one of the first companies really that had a kind of like community as we know them today, as far as like a company owning a community, right? There was, you know, BBSs, and, you know, email stuff and whatever. And I just really like fell into that hard and kind of became, you know, a lot of my life. And, you know, I did like every job that one could do there around community. And then, you know, at the time it was a weird thing. Like they were actually like that community was run by Lithium at that time, where companies just sort of signed up and said like, here, you guys run it. Like just, you know, make it happen, which is sort of unheard of nowadays. So I ended up getting hired by Lithium, and like the rest is history. I just kind of, you know, tried to figure out as much as I could about everything community forever and always. And, you know, here we are now 20 years later or whatever, and worked with hundreds of companies trying to figure out what's a community, why do we need it, how do we do it, what's the value, how do we tell the story, you know, all that kind of good stuff. So a very long journey that sort of brought me here.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned gaming and Lithium and Khoros because Lyle was a big gamer, the founder Lithium. So I remember talking to him in 2002 or three about like he wanted to create this company, and it's amazing what he created. But so it's interesting. You've worked at big companies and now you're doing your own gig. I think it'd be really helpful for folks to talk a little bit about the pros and cons of both, because there's a lot of people right now who are reevaluating their careers and trying to decide, do they, you know, ride that big company wave, or do they go off and, you know, be a consultant or a guide or a mentor or a coach?
Yeah. You know, whenever I get asked this question, I'm reminded of, there's an old clip of Steve Jobs. We'll have to find this and put it in the show notes, but he was like at some college campus and someone asked him about this, and he was talking about how, you know, as a consultant, it's like very thin, but broad, right? So you're like, you work with a lot of companies, but you only sort of do like a thin slice of whatever you're there to do as a consultant, right? And then when you're at a company, it's the reverse. It's like very deep, but you're, you know, focused on this one company. And so for me, you know, being a consultant back at Lithium, now a consultant in my own company, and then having worked at companies building community, that's definitely what I've found, is that, you know, what I do today as a consultant is very focused. It's very specific. And I don't really have to think about, you know, some of the political things and, you know, things that go on inside the companies. But at the same time, what that means is that my ability to affect change is limited, right? Like I can help companies understand, here's what I think you should do, and here's a strategy you should employ and the tactics that go with it and that sort of thing. But ultimately, someone at that company is really the one responsible for the execution, Whereas when I worked at companies, I could affect change. I had that ability. I was in the company, but you also deal with a lot more of the noise and, you know, just things that go on inside of companies. So, I'm not here to say, I guess, that, you know, like, I think both have merit, and I think people should do both or try both, because I think gives you a good perspective. And I don't know that I would be half as good of a consultant if I hadn't had those experiences at companies, because it helps me to understand what, you know, my customers are going through and how companies really work, so that I don't show up and say, well, you should do this, and it's completely never going to happen just because I'm discounting how companies work, right? So I think having both has been a really solid thing, but they're definitely, you know, kind of different animals.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point about having the experience. You know, being a native New Yorker, I like to call people out on things. And so it's hard for me sometimes to like work with a consultant who hasn't actually done it, right? You know, it's a lot of like big theory. And then when you kind of press them. And so, you know, when I've hired consultants, you know, I've looked for people like you who have been in the trenches and, you know, have actually done the day-to-day work.
Yeah. And repeated, right? So like there's a lot of consultants that have done something one time and then have sort of productized that thing that they did and say like, hey, I can, and that there's nothing wrong with that, right? I think that's, it depending on what people are looking for, it's totally fine. I think what I bring to the table is, hey, I've done this a couple of hundred times, you know, with companies, big, small, you know, every sort of focus you can imagine, developer, consumer, business, partner, marketplace, whatever. You know, and so I just try to every time bring all of that experience and make something that's sort of custom to them and what their needs are. And I think a lot of people, you know, really, really appreciate that and react well to it.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. So I want to talk a little bit about the many-to-many methodology that comes up a lot in some of the podcasts and video clips I've watched of you. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think, you know, recently I wrote something where I really leaned into that. And what I was really trying to get at is help companies that have never explored community before. Maybe they did and it was years ago and they're thinking about it again. Just trying to help them understand from a business perspective, why community, right? Like, why would I invest in this? Why would I do it? And, you know, one of the core drivers in my mind of why community is this idea of the scalability of it and the efficiency and the effectiveness that you can squeeze out of it, simply because it's scalable, it's repeatable, right? If you create a piece of content, whether that's a blog or in this case, a podcast, right? You can put this out, we're going to record for an hour here and you're done, right? You edit it, you're done, you put it out there. But then hundreds or thousands or millions of people or whatever it is can go consume that. And so, you know, sort of the, when you dollar cost average that out, if you're doing the math on the budget, that's a really efficient way, right? To sort of bring knowledge and learning and content and experience to your customers or to your audience or whoever they are that you're trying to reach. And so I was just trying to illustrate the point that a lot of things that businesses do are very reactive, right? We're reacting. A customer says this, and so we build a team of people and we try to go fix it or whatever. And that's okay, right? I think there's always going to be some element of that inside of companies. But what I'm trying to help companies understand is like, how can you be more proactive, right? How can you be scalable and how can you bring that to bear in a way that's going to help you, especially when your budgets are being slashed and your headcount's down and you're being asked to do more with less, you know, as we always hear about in these kind of economic times. So that's really what I was getting at is just, you know, what does it look like to be a truly efficient organization? And community can certainly help you on a number of different ways accomplish that.
So, you know, Mark Schaefer just came out with a book about community and brand. Community is the new brand strategy or something. I have to find the book. It's here somewhere.
Community is always the new something.
Exactly. So how do you see, I mean, what should companies do in terms of community and how to think about it? I mean, you know, I used to, when I was at HubSpot, I made the statement that community should be their homepage, you know, that they should lead with that. At Marketo, what we did was we kind of thought of the .com as acquisition and then the community platform, which was on Jive, we integrated all, you know, all these other things into it. And that was for retention or for your current customers. You know, what have you seen work well in terms of where community's role in an organization?
Yes, I think so. There's several pieces of this. I think, you know, where it reports to or that kind of a thing, I think I don't really care. You know, what I tell people is I want it to go where it's going to succeed, right? Who has the budget? Who has the vision? Who's willing to fight for it? I often think, you know, people think, oh, it has to be in marketing or it has to be in support or success. And I've worked with it in every possible place it could be, including some really weird ones, you know, at different companies. And I think that's okay. And I think that brings me to sort of, you know, how to think about community, which is, you know, for me, it's really about collaboration. It's like the community should be a platform for your whole company to think about how can we use this, right? How if I'm product, how can I connect with my customers in ways that I haven't before to get that feedback, you know, that I'm looking for, those product ideas? If I'm success, how can I use the community to enable people better or onboard them faster or answer some of their questions that, frankly, we're tired of answering as a CS org, right? Same thing with support. How can we give them peer support? So I think, you know, my methodology and my thought process and like kind of what I teach companies is like, you can start with one of those use cases, right? If you say, hey, we're just going to start with the support deflection thing.
Yeah.
Great. That's fine. I think the mission, though, over the longer course of time is to think about how can we help product? How can we help support? How can we help services? How can we help success? How can we help marketing? How can we help, you know, pre-sales, whatever? I mean, there's a lot of different use cases and a lot of things you can do to really build, like I was saying before, those efficiencies and sort of that cost effectiveness. But to do that, back to what we were saying before about, you know, kind of working in companies and having that broad experience, you have to understand what their goals are and what they need, right? I think if you show up and say, community's the new X and I'm going to solve all of your problems, you know, that's might be less compelling than if you show up and say, tell me about your goals. You know, what are you trying to do this quarter? Do you have a certain project you guys are working on or what does that look like? And then sort of meet them in the middle and say, oh, that's interesting. You know, I think with community, we could augment that in a certain way, or we could partner together and do something interesting and sort of build that trust over time and have it be something that's like more collaborative as opposed to just showing up and saying, here's the blueprint, you're going to do what I want now. You know, I think works a lot better just to kind of collaborate and have the relationships.
Yeah, when I was at Intuit, we tried to create a center of excellence, and we've heard that term with community. But Scott Cook had the insight of the only way that's going to work is to move community from group to group every 6 months. And, I don't know if that would work in most companies because I've proposed it to some of the companies that I've mentored or worked with. And they all kind of like, well, that would be really hard to implement. But I think there is something there about, you know, this is one thing to be cross-functional. It's another thing to be like embedded into that group. Another thing we've talked about a lot is unlocking value across the customer journey and using community for that. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I wish we, you know, we could have flipped these two topics. And the reason I say that just in the ordering, you know, is because to me, this is what really great communities do well is they think about their customers first, right? So we can talk about all day long, here's the value we can get in a company, you know, here's the efficiencies and the collaboration, all that stuff. The really great communities have done the opposite. They've thought about, you know, what do customers need? What do they want? What do we not have that they've been clamoring for? What have they seen on other communities or other companies that they like? And how can we bring that into our environment, right? And so when I think about sort of like the customer journey, as I call it, that really comes from, you know, I spent some time in a CX organization. Yeah. So I really got a background in thinking about, you know, holistically the whole journey and all the touch points and all those like buzzwords we use as CX professionals. And it's really about thinking deeply about every single stage of a customer's life cycle or, you know, whatever it is, whatever phase they're in or stage or however you want to think about it. What are the ways in which we touch them or they touch us or we're in contact or they need something? And how do we like get so down in the nitty gritty, right? About every one of those details and try to optimize them all, even if they're small things, because as I say, like a bunch of little ones make a big one, right? Yep. If we optimize a ton of little things, then the net effect is like, wow, this company really great, right? And so I think you can do that with community too. Like I was saying before, like you can look at those touch points and where people are at and say, okay, you know, what opportunities and what capabilities do we have to actually like inject community into these different things or, you know, move it from one system to another or whatever those things might be. And again, like I said, like community can be the platform for all of your customer activities or most of them in some pretty compelling ways if you're willing to indulge in that and invest in it, right? So I think that people who build communities that are just purely for their own business value tend to struggle, as opposed to people that have thought about, you can think about both, right? We can do both. We can win both. But I think if you're not thinking about it from the customer perspective, it's really hard actually to build a compelling community.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. And, you know, something we've wrestled with is, you know, are we community-led growth or customer-led growth? And we lean into customer-led growth because community, right, there's many different ways to touch the customer, you know, different platforms, different campaigns. So if you kind of take it from their point of view, then you can figure out, as you said, where to embed the community experience. So that definitely resonates with me. Do you know of companies that you think are doing a good job with this, or, you know, are there companies we can look at that are really focusing on, okay, here's the CX experience. How do we embed community?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, the usual suspects, right? People often talk about Salesforce. My buddy Erica, you know, is sort of famous for building that. You know, I think Microsoft does a wonderful job. I think there's a bunch of companies that do a lot of things right. And there's what I always tell people about this is, you know, I could probably rattle off a list of companies that like do it well on the whole, but what I often find is that it's the little parts, right? So if you go to any community anywhere, you know, you can say, oh, well, like these folks do gamification really well, or these people do user groups better than anyone else, or these people do ideation, you know. Stack Overflow is kind of famous for, you know, sort of their technical prowess and building a technical community. So there's all kinds of different, you know, aspects of community. And I think rather than like pointing at one specific company and saying, oh, they do everything perfect, I think it's more like, what are you trying to accomplish? What kind of community are you building? What's the personas of the people that are there? Okay, now let's go out and see, okay, you're trying to build a developer community with ideation and co-innovation. Who can I point to? You know, is it Schneider Electric? Is it SAP? Is it, you know, who might it be, right, that does those things well? There's a ton of great examples. And I always just tell people, you know, kind of learn from those folks, you know, great artists steal, as we say, and then, you know, go build something that's sort of uniquely your own, right?
But something also I like what you said is, or at least what I heard was that you don't have to boil the whole ocean at once. You might go to that whiteboard and map out everything, but almost like, you know, the book Tiny Habits is starting with these little habits to get you to the end. The same way with community is start with like one or two things in the customer experience, or starting with a customer and picking those one or two experiences and figuring out where community can play in that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, look, if it's me and I'm at a company trying to build the community, I'm going to go for broke, right? I'm going to try to do all the things, you know, as quickly as possible and have this big bang and whatever, because that's who I am and, you know, kind of how I think about building communities for myself. But I think for most companies and most people at companies, it's more realistic to take a you know, kind of phased approach to this, crawl, walk, run, marathon, you know, however you want to say it, to say, look, let's figure out one pain point of our customers. Let's figure out one use case that we can solve or dig into. And I think what's great about that approach is you sort of build respect and you build the muscle of building community by doing that before you go all the way into it. And internally inside the company and with your customers too, you start to build sort of that like, oh, okay, they did this and it worked and now they're trying this and it's probably going to work. And so as you think about, you know, from a company perspective, how do I get funding for this thing? How do I get headcount? How do we think about the investments of this? It's easier to try some experiments and learn some things and show what you did and here's what the results were and then use that to build on to the next thing, as opposed to coming to bear with a plan that's like, you know, the Brian plan of like, we're going to do everything all at once and we're going to do all of them sort of mediocre because we're spread too thin and whatever. So there's different ways to do it, you know, depending on how people want to go. But yeah, I think the iterative approach is probably the right one for like the vast majority of people.
Yeah. We talked I've talked in the past about product-led growth and how that's influenced me. And so starting with that one use case or that one goal and building from there, because you're going to learn so much, right? And rather than invest in like this complete new user experience, you know, why not waste a few dollars versus a grand sum?
Yeah, that's what I learned for sure during my time in CX, right? And I've seen that across a bunch of different companies, that people who come in and say, you know, we're going to do it all at once, right? We're going to create this whole customer experience, this whole customer journey, and it's going to be great. And we're going to spend 5 years doing it and whatever. you know, oftentimes they never get to the end of that, right? It's 5 years later and they're still kind of like, well, we kind of did something. So yeah, I think, you know, you just need to talk to your customers and understand what are your actual pain points? What do you really want me to solve and help me prioritize them? And then, you know, go as fast as you can. I'm not saying, you know, just kind of plot around or whatever. There's a lot of work to be done, but I think focusing on, you know, one major thing at a time really helps you sort of compartmentalize. And the reality is you're probably not going to have the budget or the capability or, you know, the team to do everything all at once anyway. And so you're just by nature of the business, you're going to be forced to kind of chunk it down into manageable pieces that you can try to affect change in.
No, that's great. Okay, so now the classic question people always ask me is, so how do you start a community? Where should I focus first? And I know it might be tactical in a lot of ways, but in terms of our audience, we have a lot of people who are, you know, new to community or customer marketers that are trying to figure out community. So what advice do you have for people and how would you like think about the, you know, the first 30, 60, 90 days?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, you know, just as a plug, I'll point people right to the In Before the Lock. So ib4tl.fm. You know, there's a podcast there, but there's also a bunch of resources. And there's one called the Community Launch Guide that's probably particularly relevant to people asking this question. That'll kind of help you think about that process and that sort of thing. But, you know, just to answer the question directly, I think what people need to do, I always say, you know, again, it's about solving problems, right? For your customers and for the business. And so, if you start with what are we actually trying to solve, you know, what's the real problem here or problem set, or what do we think people want that we don't have today, then I think that's where you start, right? A lot of people run out, they want to buy a platform and that, you know, we're going to buy technology and back our way into a strategy. And I really like to spend some time with people, like you said, so like the 30, 60, 90 is, you know, the first 30 days is probably discovery, right? It's probably talking to customers, talking to people in the company, trying to get a sense of like, why are we doing this? You know, does it even make sense? Which parts do we think we need or which problems do we have? I think, you know, the next 30 to 60 to 90 days, depending on the company after that, are probably strategy, right? Okay, we know what we're going to solve, but how are we actually going to do it? And what's the approach and the timeline and, you know, the resources and the people and all those things that a good strategy has. And then I think you're in a good position to say, okay, you know, now we can go get some technology. We can start to think about building the first, you know, alpha or beta of this thing, whatever we're going to call it, and try to do some experiments and see what happens, you know. That seems to be the approach I think that works best for most people, as opposed to the, you know, ready, fire, aim, we're just checking a box, you know, kind of a thing that we've often seen. Yeah.
Excellent. So I want to be sensitive to your time and also other people's time. I always say like these podcasts and sessions should be like the length should be equal to a good short walk, right? Go around the block. It's a long block here. But is there anything that I haven't asked you today that you're like, damn, Wilder, why haven't you asked me that question?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, the types of things that I end up talking with people about oftentimes are more on like the business value analytical side of things, which we've touched on a little bit, but I think the one question that almost everybody has about community, if they're thinking about it the right way, is how do I actually prove this, right? It's one thing to say, okay, we're going to go solve some problems. We're going to build a thing. We're going to do it. But how do I actually measure that, right? And so I have a pretty heavy emphasis usually with my clients or with people I talk to or anything that I do around talking about what are the outcomes that we're trying to drive from a business perspective? What are those KPIs? And so, you know, those are the kinds of things that usually people ask and we talk at length about. But I think just for brevity here, I'll just say for people, you should be thinking about that, you know, as you build a community, because you want to be able to go into, you know, whatever meeting it is or whatever, you know, updates you send or however that works at your company, however you flow information up. You want to be able to tell a compelling story about we did a thing and it resulted in this, and this is why we need to do more of it, you know, and that's how you start to build that sort of legend, if you will, of the community at your company. And like, why are we doing this? Well, we're reducing costs. We're, you know, educating customers. We're making them happier. They're buying more stuff. Like whatever those core things are, I think if you can attach those to what you're doing with community, your life's just going to be a lot easier. And I think there's more clarity for everybody involved of, you know, why are we doing this?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. You need to tie it to the business goals, business outcomes, what the company's trying to solve for. And do you have a framework that you share with your clients in terms of how to approach that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I've actually like published a lot of that stuff publicly, like on that podcast site or talks mm-hmm. that I've done out there. So I would say give it a Google, you know, or go find me on LinkedIn. I've published a lot of that stuff on LinkedIn for free because I don't actually think that the framework or like what I've just described of how you think about it is the value. I think it's the, you know, sort of execution of those frameworks, right, that really matter. And so, yeah, a lot of that stuff's publicly available, but I think everybody needs to adapt it for their own, you know, sort of company and situation. And, you know, I don't know that anything I've ever done has been the same twice in any company ever, you know, because everybody sort of has different ways of doing it. I think that's okay, you know, but hopefully it gives people a starting point of how to think about it and how to start measuring.
So you talked about the CX influence in your world. Who or what has also influenced you in terms of your professional career?
Who or what? Well, you know, I'll say that I'm a technology guy. I always have been, you know, I've always been very interested in all, like any kind of tech, just grew up that way because of my upbringing. And so, you know, in addition to CX, like I think about design a lot, mm-hmm. kind of as more of as a hobby, less professional, but, you know, I think about product design, industrial design, you know, again, like why do people make the decisions that they make? You know, what were they thinking when they made that decision? What were they trying to solve? And so I think, you know, that's been a big influence on me. I think, like I said, the CX side of it has been a big influence on me. And ultimately, I think just working, you know, in like customer support related roles for a long time was a big influence about how I think about the actualities of what customers need, not what we think they need or what we want them to need because it benefits us, but the actual essence of like, I bought your product and here's the things I need right now or in 6 months or in 3 months or whatever that, you know, journey looks like. And just being really real about that with everybody, you know, to say, so many times when I talk to clients or customers or, you know, companies, everything is so framed in, well, here's what we need.
Yeah.
You know, here's what we need to be true. Here's what I need to hit my numbers. And I get why, right? I totally understand that and respect that. And I hope you hit your numbers, right? But I think the best way to get there is to actually kind of think about it from the other angle of like, if I just do the right things enough and consistently over a long period of time for customers and I make them successful, I'll hit my numbers and we'll make money and life will be good, you know? And I think that that's been bared out to be fairly true over the last, you know, couple of decades of companies, especially tech companies, about which ones succeed and which ones maybe succeed less. There's clearly a customer focus at the Amazons of the world, the Apples of the world, you know, that sort of differentiate them, right, from those other companies. Mm-hmm. So think about your customers.
Yeah, I always say, you know, people say, who do you work for now, Scott? Because I've moved around quite a bit. I said, I work for the customer.
Yeah.
The customer's my boss.
That's right.
Just in talking about this, what are like some 3 or 4 tactics that you would use to really understand the customer's point of view and what the customer wants?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of surveys, you know, like I have this thing I always say where like companies spend a lot of time and money guessing, you know, about what people want, or it's filtered through our lens or our perspective. I like to just ask them, Scott, like, I want to know, you know, tell me what keeps you up at night? Tell me, you know, where we're falling down, even if it's ugly and dirty and nasty, like, tell me where we're screwing up so that I can try and help you fix it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think surveys are a good thing. I think just having those conversations, I'm a big fan of both one-on-one and like round table, you know, get some people in a room or on a Zoom or whatever, and just have a conversation about, tell me about the first time you learned about us. Tell, you mm-hmm. know, kind of classic CX, like, tell me about a time when you were researching one of our products and what did you feel and where did you go and what did it look like and what would you wish we would have had? You know, those are kinds of things that I tend to do. I just want to talk to people. And I think, you know, if you ask the right questions, you'll learn a lot and they'll tell you everything you need to know. And then it's your job to go fix it, you know, which is kind of the harder part.
Yeah. No, I think that that's great. You know, it reminds me of earlier in my career before we were Zooming, before we were, you know, and when I worked at a big company and we had these call centers, I used to have a couch right outside my office, and I would just listen to calls all day.
Yeah.
And then I would ask the client, we set it up so I could ask the rep, can I jump in? And I learned more that way than any other time in my life. You know, I mean, it's great to be in person with them, but the fact that I was hearing their pain and then I was able to come in and say, you know, tell me more, tell me about the environment you're in, tell me what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so powerful. Yeah. I used to just sit on sales calls. I used to sit on, you know, customer success, renewal calls, like whatever, support calls, just to kind of understand what are they actually saying, you know, because I think a lot of times it's different than what we sort of perceive or what we want it to mean. And then I think what's interesting about that approach is that then when you go back into the organization, right, and you say, hey, here's what we need to do. We need to do X because of Y. The why is not because I said so or because I think so or because it behooves me in my numbers, you know, or whatever this quarter. It's because, you know, Samantha over at our biggest customer said this thing. And it creates a situation where people can disagree with it, but they can't hide from it, right? You can't hear what a customer has to say, especially when they're really passionate about it. Or, you know, I mean, I've been in meetings where people are crying and like, you know, you can't have a conversation like that and go back into the organization and have people just say, oh, well, they don't know what they're talking about, whatever, right? It makes it real. It puts a face and a name to it. And I think that's a really important, you know, kind of driver of change in organizations, that it's not just like some sentence in a memo somewhere. It's like, no, there's a real person, you know, that said this thing about us and we should do better, you know? And I just think that makes it real in a way that most other things don't.
I love it. Well, it's been great talking to you, Brian. Thank you for coming by the CLG campus and Customer-Led Groove. Anyway, so thanks everybody for dialing in today to Customer-Led Groove. Like everybody says, you can find us on Amazon, Spotify, Google, Alexa, et cetera. But what I like to say is don't worry about liking us. Just listen and then play it forward. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you again for joining Customer-Led Groove. Remember, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and on the CLG campus. Feel free to rate us, follow us, and leave a comment on any of those platforms. We hope to see you again soon when we're back in the Customer-Led Groove.